So I'm going to start out and just thank everyone for being here today. And I want everybody to think back, because now I'm old enough to think back, to a time when we didn't have smartphones. Can anybody remember that? Can you remember when you didn't have your smartphone? Andrew back there, can you remember a time? No, you can't. You're probably too young. And I'm one of those who can remember what it was like before we had a smartphone, because I can still remember driving in Chicago with a map in front of my steering wheel as I'm driving, and then traffic just coming to a screeching halt and me looking at my map and realizing that, hey, I better stop, and jamming on the brakes. And the benefits that we have to having a smartphone, right? Because now I can just kind of plug in my phone or plug it in an address into my car, we can get any place we want. So there are some advantages of that, but the downside to some of these things is the amount of time that we've been spending on our smartphones. Is anyone out here, I'm just going to, since I don't have much of a voice, I'm going to ask anybody else, does anybody else ever think about the amount of time that you spend on your cell phone, your smartphone, or screens? I think Angie calls it screens. The amount of time we're doing and what we could be doing instead. So Angie and I, we've kind of come to the point where we're like, all right, we're going to start trying to limit the amount of screen time that we have for the kids. I know Harrison and Dominic don't necessarily want to hear that. We're going to try to cut that back somehow, because I'm going downstairs and the guys are downstairs and I'm saying, guys, come on, let's go outside, let's do something. And it's almost like they don't even hear me. You know what I mean? It's like when you get on a cell phone like that, we've been doing a little bit of work as far as how your brain reacts. Angie and I have kind of been taking that, call it a course. And your brain just stops. When you get on there, your brain just stops. And I know it does, because when I'm talking to those guys, no one's listening to me. You know, I think about it that way. Or either I'm doing a really good job of training them to be married, right? Because Angie says I never listen to her when I'm on my cell phone. But your brain stops. It goes to mush, so you don't really use your brain, if I have that correct. So I'm like, all right, we're going to get these guys to start getting off their phones. Let's get out. Let's do some things. And then every Sunday morning, I get this little thing that says, your weekly screen time. And I used to look at my own weekly screen time. Has anybody ever noticed that on your phone? My weekly screen time, and I'm like, how could I have possibly spent that much time on my phone? Does anybody get that? Does anybody even know what I'm trying to say? Because, oh, your phone time is up 15%, or it's down 5%. And I was like, you know, I could write 4 or 5 sermons for the amount of screen time that I have on my phone. So we want to really try and get off that, but it's a problem that we have, Angie and I, because I go downstairs and I'm telling, hey guys, you got to get off your phone. At the same time, I'm trying to adjust my team for my ESPN fantasy football. You know what I mean? So I'm going down there telling these guys to do this, and I'm doing this. So this plays out to Matthew. If you guys ever remember, does everybody remember what Matthew 7 verses 3 through 5 says? Think about this. It says, and why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but you not consider the plank in your own eye? It's like I've got fantasy football planked, stuck in my eye when I'm down there trying to tell these guys to get off the football. You know, get off your phones. Let's do something outside. Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye and look, a plank is in your own eye. Hypocrite. First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove this plank, the speck from your brother's eye. So this is something that we need to do. Angie and I have talked about it. We've got to get out there and do some things and stop spending so much time, wasting time on politics and fantasy football and YouTube and just all those things that are out there, and start putting some good things in front of our faces. So one of the things that Dominic came up with, he wants to build a chicken coop, right, Dominic? Yep, he'd like to build a chicken coop. And so our neighbors, they have chickens, and so they let us take care of those chickens. I don't know if you guys saw us last Sunday. We had a race in here. We were pretty out of sorts, I guess, with what we were trying to do, because the neighbor had told us, all right, this is how you feed the chickens. This is how you water the chickens. And he's like, okay, you want to turn the light on at night so that they're warm, and you turn it off during the day. So he had all this stuff down. The only thing that he didn't say was, what are you going to do? What do you do when the chickens get out? All right, so we had this little bit of a problem with our chickens because there was this one gray chicken. And Harrison, I think this gray little chicken had been waiting the whole day, the whole night, I guess this was the morning when we came in there, the whole night just waiting for us to come in and open the door. Because as soon as Harrison opened the door, that chicken bolted. He was out the door, I was like, oh, we got a chicken, we got a chicken loose. What are we gonna do? So the chicken turned around and went back towards the door, this really smart chicken. So he's going back to the door. The guy's like, oh, he's going back in. So we opened the door. Next thing you know, I was like, all the chickens were out. It was just the great chicken, I'll call it the great chicken escape. This one little great chicken was super smart that he baited us to open the door to let all his friends out. Now we're out here running around trying to chase these chickens, and none of us knew how to chase a chicken. And now I'm learning from my wife that she had actually talked to the guy that had these chickens, and he told her, it's like, all right, if the chickens get out, here's what you do. You get a book, and you get a lawn chair, and you sit and you read for a couple hours, and they'll go in on their own. Well, this is like 8 o'clock before we had church, right? So we had to get here and get these chickens. So the guys and I decided to regroup. We went to his garage. We got a big broom. We got a snow shovel. There was a big tub that I think a tree grew in, big black tub like this, got one of those. And then I got a pool net, like a net that would go all the way across the pool in case you wanted to get a bug out, right? So now we're trying to chase these chickens and we're armed with all these weapons and they're just going everywhere. And so finally we kind of corralled them, and then slowly and slowly and slowly worked them in. And an hour later we got those chickens in and we got here to church. And we're pretty happy that we were able to get here. But it's a great story and we weren't on our phone. So it reminds me of a story with my dad. And I'll be done with my stories and we can start the actual sermon. So story with my dad. My dad and I, we raised hogs. And when I was about Dominic's age, in about sixth grade, I would help him load the hogs to market. So I would be about 90 pounds and the hogs were right. I think for them to be ready to go to market, they weighed about 225 pounds. And so my dad, I was herding him up with my dad. He's like, you gotta get over there and you gotta stop him. So I did, I got over and stopped him. The only thing that he didn't tell the hog that when I'm over there, you gotta stop. Well, that hog went right through me and I rode him going backwards for about, 20 or 30 feet. And my dad today still feels really bad about that story, but I laugh about that story with him. It's something that we can tell him about, right? So, We like the story, and the guys and I are going to talk about this chicken story for a long time. Same thing with my dad talking about this time that I got ran over by a hog, and I was never, ever going to be able to stop that hog. All right, so let me catch up to where we are. What does God say about all this? I've gone on for quite some time. In Psalms 101, 1 through 3. Let's take a look at that, about what God says about the things that we put in front of our eyes. In verse 1, it says, I will sing of mercy and justice to you, O Lord. I will sing praises. Verse 2 says, I will behave wisely in a perfect way. O, when will you come to me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. And then verse 3 is the one I want to focus on when we start thinking about all the time we spend on the phones. It says, I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. And there's one more verse that would go with that, I think. And so let's take a look at that. It is Philippians, and I think everybody knows that. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Philippians 4 and verse 8. That says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on those things. So that is what we're going to try to do in the West household. We're going to try to stay off of our phones. We're going to try to start thinking and meditating on those things. So we must be careful about this, about those things that we put before our eyes. All right, so now let's get into the sermon. On my grandmother's house, She passed away, I think, of last June. Another one of the things we've been trying to do is help my parents get that house cleaned up. All right, so the house, is basically exactly the same as it was when she passed away. We haven't done really a thing to it. And if you didn't know any better, you'd think she would come around the corner and there she'd be, because it's my mom cleans it, it's so clean, it just looks exactly like she was. So it's not like the funnest thing you want to do. So in the same time, I'm thinking about all these things we just talked about before, but I ran across my great-grandfather's Bible. And this Bible, I thought, you know what, maybe he has something in here that's encouraging that I can actually come up with a sermon about. What could he have in this Bible? I hadn't really seen it. Let's take a look and see what's in this Bible. So anyway, he must have had, it was just basically a New Testament Bible is what it was, but he must have had a brand new stamp with his name and his address on it, because in the first part he like took this stamp and stamped everywhere, in the back he stamped everywhere. And then he also looked a little bit like this, where he had a lot of little sayings as markers. So he had sayings like maybe marking a chapter, marking a verse, or something like that. Looks like he cut all that stuff out. And then he had my parents' wedding invitation was in there, so that was interesting to see. Their wedding invitation was marking a chapter. And he also had his bank card, which is not what we look at as a bank card today. All this card was a card that had the hours for the banking if you ever wanted to go to the bank or the drive-thru, right? So we couldn't put it in and get money out. Guys, that's what bank cards were in the old days, right? Okay, so we had all that, and we had all these sayings in there, so I started going through it, and the first saying was from Woodrow Wilson. In fact, I had to really look and see when Woodrow Wilson was actually president of the United States. It's like back in 1912. All right, so he's alive in 1912, and he's got this quote from him, and I'm just going to read it. And it said, "It is just as hard to do your duty when men are sneering at you as when they are shooting at you." And so I was like, well, I wonder would that make a sermon? So I started looking up on something about Woodrow Wilson, and I found out that he started income tax. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to start making a sermon on Woodrow Wilson. And it wasn't very encouraging at all. You know, I thought maybe there'd be something in there, as I mentioned before, that'd be encouraging. So as a little bit of an aside, from Mark, we're going through the New Testament, a lot of the books in the New Testament on Wednesdays. Just so you know, in 1968, of December 15th, they started the New Testament and went through it book by book. They finished June 29th of 1975. So Mark, we have a good 4.5 to 5 years before we finish it. What is it that we're in 2023, by what, 2028, we're going to be through that book. And then they started over again, because I saw it. So if anyone ever wants to know exactly how long it takes to get through a chapter in a Bible, he's got every single chapter, when they started, when they finished, when they started, and when they finished. But the next thing that we came across said, life is like a jigsaw puzzle with most of the pieces missing. So I took a look at this one and thought, this is not encouraging at all. You know, I don't know anything that I could write about this. But then I got to thinking a little bit about how that would relate to your faith. Has anyone thought about that? Because your faith just doesn't like happen, right? You get your foundation built, but it's more like a weightlifter. A weightlifter is not going to be able to bench 300 pounds right off the bat. Or a runner is not going to run a 5-minute mile right off the bat. And Harrison knows that, and Dane back there, because they've been improving on their times, but they only improve like maybe 30 seconds a race, or 15 seconds, or something like that. So as you think about your faith and how we improve our faith, it came to me as like, you know, it's like, it is like a jigsaw puzzle, and you keep putting pieces in to strengthen your faith. Because the whole Bible is of itself, you can just take it and keep putting pieces in and pieces in and pieces in, like the tree of life. The tree of life is found in Genesis. The tree of life is found in Revelation. It starts from the beginning, it goes to the end. There's just a lot of little things that you can start adding. So I went back to my phone. I went back to my phone and take a look at this. What is the worldly definition of faith? What do you think the world thinks faith is? It's a really long definition that you can find. It says, the acceptance of the mind to the truth of a proposition of a statement for which there is no complete evidence. So think about that when you start to think about your faith. What does the world teach you about faith? Your faith is trying to teach yourself to believe something that you don't think is real. It's Just read that again, or read that and look online and take a look at that. What does our Bible say about that? Let's take the verses that that Harrison read in Hebrews 11, okay? Let's look at Hebrews 11, verse 1, and let's contrast that to the worldly view of faith. 11:1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for the evidence of things not seen." That's completely opposite of what that was saying in a worldly view. We know that there's a God and He's real. And we know what's happening behind the scenes, and there's an invisible God in our lives. We're not trying to convince ourselves through something, trying to find something that we can do that. Let's look at Hebrews 11:6. It says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." So now let's just run with that as far as how our faith goes. And we can run to 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15. I think everyone's familiar with that at all as well. That verse says, "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." So this comes back to our weightlifting thing. We've got to work at this. Everyone needs to help each other in trying to find and grow our faith. So let me give you an example of faith. Has anybody thought about blood clotting? Anybody thought about how you clot your blood? Has anybody tried to squeeze blood clotting into evolution? What would have happened to the animals that were alive before blood clotting started? And it actually is a step-by-step sequence to clot your blood. And any chemical missing and your blood is not going to clot in this sequence, right? So if you're an animal before blood clotting started, you scrape yourself, you're done for. And this reminds me of a cartoon that I enjoy as a kid. Has anyone ever seen The Far Side? Does anyone ever know anything about The Far Side? The Far Side is just like one section of a cartoon. It's just one. Everyone is different. You get one section of a cartoon. One of the most famous ones probably is the gal who's sitting in the seat next to her husband, and the side view mirror says, "Objects in the mirror are closer than they seem," and there's a big eyeball in her mirror of something that's ready to eat her. Okay, so has everybody seen The Far Side? You know what I'm talking about. So blood clotting and evolution, if you were at that would make a perfect joke for The Far Side. I mean, think about it, and I've asked Mark, and I've asked Harry if I can use these guys, right? Because The Far Side used a lot of cavemen. So bear with me on this thought. If Mark, Mary Jo, and Harry and Connie are cave people, right? They're sitting out in front of their caves, okay? Harry comes out, stubs his toe, busts it real good, bleeding all over. Mark looks at Mary Jo and he says, "Nice guy that he is. I'm going to go out back and start digging the hole." Right? Because Harry, there's no chance. Well, he comes back after digging the hole, and there's Harry sitting there with his toe stopped bleeding. And Mary Jo says to Mark, "Mark, would you look at that? Harry and Connie have learned how to clot their blood. Why can't you do that?" So can you see that cartoon coming along? Does it make any sense that an animal could clot its blood and the next generation couldn't? Zero sense whatsoever. In fact, we ought to try and get the caveman depicting of a caveman more concise. If there was cavemen running around, we should have band-aids all over these guys, right? But you see a caveman in these pictures, they don't have any band-aids on them at all. They'd have scrapes and everything, every which thing, if you think about it. So let's just start thinking about evolution and what that really means, and how God created our universe, God created us in this way. There is no way possible that we could have blood clotting evolve. Okay? Let's take a look at another puzzle piece. But you can add that piece to your puzzle along with this one. Let's take a look at Job 26, verses 7. It says, "He stretches out the north over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing." How do you think Job knew that the earth was hanging there on nothing? Why wouldn't we have something holding up the earth? Of course, you see things where the earth is being held up on someone's shoulders from people who had no idea of how the earth was being held up. Or let's take a look at King Herod. If you turn with me with Matthew 2, let's take a look at Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12. I'm going to go ahead and read it. My voice will stay with me. But I want you to think about King Herod here in this. And it says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes and of the people together. He inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So they said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel."' Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the young child, and when you have found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also.' When they heard the king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw this star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Then, being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed for their own country and another way." All right, now if you've read all this and you've thought about all this, I want everybody to go home and take a look at this. All right. Why did Herod care? What happened with Herod, King Herod? Why would he even worry about this? This guy is king. All of a sudden, he went out to kill all the two-year-olds, and I've heard anything from, 14,000 to 144,000? Why would he want to stir up the people and kill 144,000 people? So, if you think about it, in some weird way, evil way, he believed. This guy believed enough that he was going to kill all these people right off the bat in Matthew of someone like King Herod. So you can add that piece. And if you also think about it, the whole story in and of itself works together. You know, wise men, why were they going over there? King Herod, why was he so excited about that? The wise men, why did they skip going back to see King Herod? How did all these things work? What was going on? It's just a part of the great story, and King Herod plays a role. So, now that you can put some pieces into the Bible, sometimes we need to remove pieces from our Bible. Let me start with this one. Let me ask everybody, how many wise men went to see Jesus? How many? I've heard three, an awful lot. But if I just read that in verses 1 through 2, how many wise men were there? It doesn't say three. So you can take that piece out of your puzzle. Here's another one. Everybody think about this. How about the saying, "Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me." What Bible verse is that? Or is that in the Bible? I got some people shaking their heads no. You will not find that popular saying in the Bible. In fact, James 3, chapter 3, verse 6 says about your tongue, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell." Quite the difference between what man thinks about your tongue and what the Bible says. How about this one? "Time heals all wounds." Time heals all wounds. In the Bible, time heals all wounds. Harry, you got to know. That is not found in the Bible. If you look in Matthew chapter 5 and you go from verses 23 through 24, it says, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." I have another one. Let's think about this one. and then we'll close on this one a little bit more. Baptism is an outward sign of an inward change. Baptism is an outward sign of an inward change. It's pretty popular. Is that found in the Bible? Absolutely not. You do not find anything like that in the Bible. All right. We had a neighbor in Michigan, and we wanted him to go to church with us. He was kind of, Angie, he was retired, kind of nervous, smoked all the time, sat out in his garage and watched TV, and then knew everybody that came in and out of the neighborhood. So we asked him one time, hey, what do you think about going to church with us? And he said something like, you know what, if I would walk in church, lightning would strike me down. And I thought about that, and I tried to come up with something sort of witty or something to say to this guy about that. And I thought, the only thing I could really come up with was we've fireproofed our church, which wasn't true, and I didn't tell him that, but I couldn't think of anything else to say. So if you do come across a saying like that again, I want everybody to take a look at 2 Peter. If I had to do it all over again, and the work that needs to be done for me to work on the Bible and think of things and to have an answer to somebody when they say something like this. As the Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering towards us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. If I had to do that over, I would say that something like that this time, instead of something smart. Sometimes we have to really be careful that we are proud of all the knowledge and the puzzle pieces that we have in our Bible. So, on Wednesdays, we have been working in Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, in verses 1 through 2. I'm going to read that to you as well. It says, "Now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And if anyone thinks that he knows anything, he knows nothing yet as he ought to know." We spent some time in chapter 8, and I actually had some puzzle pieces I needed to take out of chapter 8 and add some new ones in. And I think Mark even talked about, when he went through it the first time, taught that chapter and versus where he's teaching it now, and how different he looks at some of those verses just by studying it and looking at it again the second time. So, if we think we know everything there needs to know, and we become puffed up, because that is a problem sometimes, being puffed up about how many puzzle pieces that we have versus someone else. Maybe we ought to start thinking about helping other people build their other puzzle pieces. And if you think you do know it all, you don't know much. So we need to be servants, and I think Ross has worked really hard on trying to get that across in our minds, not puffed up, to teach others, to help others, to help us all reach that heavenly goal. So now I'm going to talk a little bit and wrap this up about the fundamentals. Let's think a little bit about the fundamentals. The first one for us to do anything at all with our faith and even start to outline our puzzle is we must hear the Word of God. You're going to have to hear it in Romans 10:17. And then we must believe it. So you're going to have to believe the things that you hear. You're going to have to take these puzzle pieces and start adding them all together, because they're all through this Bible. All of them added together build a really strong faith. So we're going to have to believe it. And then we're going to have to confess. We find that in Romans 10, verses 8 through 10. And then we're going to repent. And we'll find that in Acts 3, verse 19, and also Luke 13, 3. And then at the last part of this I have is baptism. Now, take that back to what I talked about earlier, where baptism is an outward sign of an inward change. Never, ever will you see that in the Bible as a verse. What you do see is Romans. If you turn to Romans chapter 6, verses 3 through 7. Romans 6, chapter 3 through 7, or verses 3 through 7, it says, "Or do you not know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ were baptized into his death? Therefore we were buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we should walk in newness of life. For if we have been united together in the likeness of his death, certainly we also shall be in the likeness of his resurrection. Knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves of sin." So if there is anything that anyone needs today, if anyone has thought about those things, thought about crossing that line, because there's a line there, and we need to, when we talked about that in our gospel meeting, and he stated that in a really nice way, it's like we need to get into Christ. Or if there's anything that you need today, you can come forward as Mark will lead us in our invitation song.